I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, starting May 6th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Joel Salatin with us, and his family own Polyface Farm in Virginia's Shenandoah Valley. They produce and direct marketing salad bar beef, pigerator pork, pasteurized poultry, and pastured eggs. Author of a number of books, he speaks at food, farming, and health conferences all over the planet. Polyface Farm is the good farm featured in the award-winning documentary Food, Inc., features prominently in the ecological alternative in the New York Times bestseller Omnivore's Dilemma. His self-described moniker is, listen to this, Christian libertarian environmentalist capitalist lunatic farmer. Joel, welcome back. How have you been?
I've been great, George. Thank you. It's a delight and an honor to be with you.
Lots going on. Why are the European farmers so upset?
Yeah, well, you know, I've been to Europe many, many times over the years doing a lot of, you know, I do farmer seminars over there on how to farm without chemicals and direct market and the different things that we do. And the reason that this is, so I have a little different take on it because I've spent so much time there with farmers. In fact, I'm going back to Austria and Hungary here in May, and then back to Switzerland or maybe Portugal in October. So I have a little bit of a different perspective than a lot of folks. And the thing that people have to understand is that the EU has subsidized farmers to the tune of $60 billion, that's 60, $60 billion a year, basically since World War II. And so these farmers have gotten extremely, whatever, you know, dependent on this government largesse, and they've overbuilt buildings, they've overbought machinery, they've overspent, because that's what you do, you know, when there's easy money. And so, for example, in the Netherlands, one of the reasons that it all started in the Netherlands is because the Netherlands is the point of the spear in this whole movement. For example, yeah, I ran into, it's not uncommon there to run into a dairy farmer, for example. Hey, you know, you dairy, yeah, we're dairy farming. How many cows do you milk? No, we milk 100. Okay, so how big is your farm? 10 acres. George, you can't put 100 cows on 10 acres.
Mm-mm.
And assimilate. I mean, that's 220,000 pounds of manure and urine per acre, which is about four times the amount that the land can handle. And so in the Netherlands, for example, all this manure and urine runoff, same thing with pigs, chickens, but dairy cows are probably the worst. It runs into the canals and clogs up the canals with nutrients that make the willows and the vegetation grow voraciously. Well, then the township has all this money trying to clean out the canals so the water can run. The countryside smells like a toilet. I've been there. I mean, the whole thing, not in the cities, but in the country, the whole area smells like a toilet because of this over waste. And so you simply can't overrun an ecology like that. And so that's why things started in the Netherlands, and it has spread, to other areas. And just like here in the U.S., the average farmer there is fairly old. You know, they're about 60 years old. And the older you get, as you know, the less adaptable you are, to transitions. And so with the EU under pressure now with all their social programs, and now with trying to send military aid to the Ukraine, with Putin's invasion and trying to come up to their NATO spending budgets, they're looking for where can we cut spending, and agriculture is certainly top on the list. And so as they start to try to wean these farmers, some of them off of these, you got to realize the EU farmers, half of their income, the average EU farmer, half of his annual income comes from direct EU subsidies, half of his income. So when they start taking away this perk or that perk or something else, these older farmers are fighting back. They don't like to be weaned off that government paycheck, and this is what's broadly developing it.
Is it fixable over there, Joel?
Well, yes, it certainly is fixable. The farmers though need to understand that they simply can't be just dependent on a government paycheck all the time. I mean, I've had farmers show me like the spreadsheet, the checklist, and so I'm driving along, and the farmer says, "See that goose nest over there? It's a wild goose nest. I get $1,000 a year for not disturbing that nest." And it's amazing all the different things, these quote unquote ecological benefits that farmers get a direct check for over there. And so yes, it certainly, they don't need chemical fertilizer. They can use compost. No place has as much biomass and compostable material as Europe. They can direct market. They don't have to, they don't have to go through all the channels, supermarkets and things like that. And a lot of it is just they need to start acting or being adapting more to an entrepreneurial business climate. And those kinds of transitions are difficult, especially when you're older. So yes, it's fixable, but it will take some time to move their agricultural economy and subsidization program, to move it to a more market area oriented program like we have here.
Now, somebody listening in tonight, Joel, might be saying, "Who cares about European farmers? What about here?" How do you answer that?
Yeah, well, of course, historically, kind of as Europe goes, so goes America. About three decades later. And, I don't know in this case whether that's going to be the way things go, but what has happened, I think, in this is a much broader, what I call a blue collar, revolution. And one of the reasons that the farmers are enjoying so much support, it's easy for me kind of as a libertarian entrepreneur to say, come on, farmers, get over this. You got to adapt. Let's join the real market here.
Yeah.
It's kind of easy to say that, but more broadly, I think the farmers, appreciate that being a minority, they have become the whipping boy for the economic malaise that is now fostered upon Europe due to escalating prices of social programs, all the social safety network, and now what's really put the put the hiatus on it all is this whole the war in Ukraine. And of course the price of fuel. You know, like Germany, where they're not getting that cheap Russian fuel, so their fuel prices have doubled, and of course the prices for fuel for the farmers have also doubled, and so that's why this whole not getting a fuel allowance has got them so stirred up. Not only are they trying to cut the fuel allowance, the subsidy for the farmers, but also the price of the fuel is going up. And so there's this broad kind of support, and I totally get this, that farmers have become the whipping boy for the economic restriction, the economic difficulties that all this is creating. And that's why it's enjoying such broad support among, you know, the trades, the electricians, the plumbers, the truckers, the blue-collar trades see this as generally a disrespect and a dishonor of the working class. And I think that's what can move across to America here is a broad a backlash among the trade blue-collar movements for the same kinds of issue, you know, cheap imports, overregulation, difficulty to start a business, high taxes, you know, those kinds of things are enjoying the similar kind of support here in the U.S.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpert.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with the Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, we, of course, have been our farmers, the breadbasket of the world in producing food for everybody. Is that going to continue, Joel?
Yes, I don't see any reason that that will discontinue. American farmers have, I mean, we do offer subsidies. Well, they don't call it subsidies anywhere. They call it crop insurance. But we only insure six things. You know, we don't insure beef cows and maple syrup and honey. You know, we only insure six commodities that were always part of the subsidy. Corn, soybeans, wheat, rice, cotton, and sugarcane.
That's it? Just those six?
That's it, yeah, just those six. Those are the things. Now, you know, there have been, excuse me, things like price supports for things like milk, you know, dairy, things like that, that have definitely created weirdness within the market. Anytime the government intervenes in the marketplace, there's going to be distortions that you wouldn't see in a normal market. But in general, the U.S. has been a lot less interventive, certainly with direct payments than the European Union. And so American farmers tend to be much more, what do we say, leaner and meaner. You know, we've become a little more aggressive about the market realities of the global market, of production costs, and those sorts of things. And so, you know, I don't see that changing a tremendous amount in the U.S. anytime soon.
Joel, when COVID hit, of course, we saw the run on the supermarkets with everything, toilet goods, paper goods, food, everything went. And that's when we were still producing things at a regular basis. What happens if there's a downturn in production?
Well, the COVID shortages were not because we were underproducing. The COVID shortages were because of the human
overbuying.
Well, no, it was the glitches in the human resources. I mean, we incinerated during COVID. We incinerated millions of chickens, turkeys, and pigs. Not very many cows because they have a longer chain, you know, from farm to plate. But the things that were the shortest, that couldn't wait for processing plants to restart, get up and going, were the shorter duration things, like pigs, which only take about, you know, 6 to 7 months, chickens, which take, you know, 6 to 7 weeks, turkeys, which take, you know, 12 to 14 weeks. And so all that production was in the front end of the food chain, and when the big processing facilities stopped to retool and re-plexiglass, if you will, they ended up that they just couldn't take these animals coming in the pipeline, and so they incinerated them, and it shows the fragility of this long food chain. You know, we think it's efficient, but actually it's extremely fragile because of just-in-time inventorying and all the things of supposed efficiency actually creates high risk. And so COVID was not a production issue. It was a processing issue. It was not on the farm end. It was out on the processing end. Now, if farmers, you know, produce less, then you have another whole story. But I certainly don't see American farmers, reducing their production anytime soon. And I mean, the one thing that has reduced substantially in the last 18 months is beef cattle, and that's primarily due to the drought. From basically West Texas through Georgia Louisiana, Alabama, all those southern tier of the U.S. has been in an incredible drought. Of course, now Texas is on fire.
Yeah, that's
burning up a lot of spring pasture as well. And so the American cow herd is now lower than it's been since 1950. And that's one reason why prices are going through the roof, going up dramatically in the beef sector. It's not any kind of government manipulation or farmers, whatever, don't want to raise cows anymore. It's when there's no grass, there's no cows. And that's a reduction. And so to deal with that issue, we need to confront, well, how do we ameliorate drought? I mean, are there things farmers can do to reduce susceptibility to drought? And I would suggest there are. You don't hear about that much. Mainly you just hear whining and complaining about the weather, which farmers, of course, have done forever. But I kind of have a three-ingredient recipe for dealing with this and taking a lot of the edge off of droughts. I mean, we've had floods and droughts from time immemorial. Those didn't just start in the last, 50 years. And so if we really want to get ahead of this drought situation, we need to talk about how to reduce the vulnerability to drought. And there are definitely things that we farmers can do. We've certainly done them here on our farm to reduce drought. I mean, we average a drought four years out of five. Only one in 5 years do we really not have a drought at all. And so they are routine, and we need to reduce that risk factor. We can talk about that if you want to.
I had heard that China is buying up American farmland like crazy. Is that true?
I wouldn't say buying it up like crazy. I would say buying it up strategically. And the thing that's got, there really isn't, they're not buying that much acreage. What they are buying is acreage near strategic U.S. military assets. Even though it's not a whole lot of acreage, the particular location of the acreage is raising eyebrows. I don't think this is a production issue so much as it is an actual, a kind of an espionage issue, if you will. And that's what's raising the concern of a lot of people is not how much it is, but exactly where it is.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, starting May 6th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.